Last night, WYLL-TV aired the PBS Frontline documentary League of Denial, looking at the controversy over long-term brain injuries in professional football. But even high school football can be rough enough that high schools have policies in place to try to prevent concussion and take action when it occurs. I'm Jim Meadows. Today on Focus, we talk with the athletic director at Monticello High School and an athletic trainer at Centennial High School in Champaign about how they handle the risk of concussion. And we'll talk with former athlete and concussion prevention advocate Chris Nowinski. That's coming up on Focus. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. In recent years, there's been new research and new concern about the lasting harm caused by concussions in football and other contact sports. The PBS Frontline documentary League of Denial portrayed the National Football League's push against this mounting research, but also changes the league has made in their rules to try to limit concussions. The rules have changed for high school football as well, and that's the topic of our program today. We'll be looking at how the game of high school football has changed in just the last few years and ask whether those changes are effective. Later in the show, we'll talk with an athletic trainer who works with athletes at Centennial High School in Champaign, and with Chris Nowinski, a former athlete who works as an advocate for concussion research and prevention. We want to hear your thoughts and comments, too. Are you a parent of a high school football player or other sports athlete? Are you worried about concussions? And what information is your school providing on the subject? We'll be taking your calls and emails later in the show at 1-800-222-9455 and at will-talk@illinois.edu. But right now, I want to introduce you to Randy Moss. He's the athletic director at Monticello High School, where their varsity football team is having a great season. I interviewed Mr. Moss earlier this week, and the first thing I asked him about was last Friday's homecoming win by the Monticello Sages over the Sullivan Redskins. Randy Moss, first, I wanted to congratulate you for a successful homecoming victory on Friday night.
Yes, it was a nice victory for our football team, and also went 6-0 after that game, so that's good for us going into week 7 and also into the state playoffs.
Okay, can you tell me what it's like to be at a high school football game in Monticello, especially one like the one you had last Friday?
Well, with it being homecoming and all, it was just an exciting time for everybody coming back and being part of the homecoming festivities. And, you know, we had a real nice crowd on our side of the field. And so I'm sure the players enjoyed that. And it was just a nice festivity for our players and student-athletes and even our student body as they cheered for our football team on to victory on Friday night.
It sounds like something that sort of electrifies the whole community. I was in over the weekend and saw some of the signs that were still up.
Yeah, we have the parade on Friday during the day, and so everybody comes around, and of course all the classes that it's their, you know, reunions that come into town and also are in the parade and stuff. So it's an exciting time for everybody, and sometimes our coaches feel like it's a distraction to the players sometimes, and it can be, but everything went well and we got the victory, and so we're moving on now, but it was a good time.
Now, I understand that the high school is working with new rules being implemented by the Illinois High School Association to protect against concussions. I guess they're rules that come from the national organization. Can you tell me anything about those?
Yeah, I think it's been now 2 years ago when the IHSA got on board with the National Federation and implemented the concussion rule, which what that does for us is we make sure that all of our athletes, not only football players, but all of our athletes are given the information they need for concussions, and it also is signed off by the parents. So the parents and the athletes also see the information about concussions and the symptoms, the signs, and what the steps are if there is a concussion. So it's just a precautionary thing that I think, kind of educates people on things that are, that's going on. You know, there's been a lot of us that probably played with concussions when we were younger and really didn't probably realize it. You know, we maybe saw stars and stuff and we thought, okay, we're ready to go and we're back in. But now with, you know, and even the equipment now is better than it was when we played. But it's, you know, a precautionary thing, and in the long run, it's good.
These are precautions you've been taking for a couple of years now. They're not brand new.
Yes. Yeah, we've been doing it for a couple of years already.
Okay. What sort of things do you do that's different out on the field as far as guarding against precautions, whether it's in practice or at a game?
Most of our athletes that are in contact sports, like in the fall, we kind of really worry about football and soccer in particular, that they do a pre-test. The trainer comes in and does a pre-test to all of our athletes, just to kind of have a measuring stick, basically where they're at with students, and making sure that, you know, nobody's coming in with a concussion from something else, maybe. But we do that kind of test, and then anytime there's a collision that, you know, the official believes that there might be a problem, of course, you know, they send them off the field. And they're tested by the trainer or physician that's on the sideline. And they can't return back into action unless that physician or trainer says it's okay for them to get back into action.
Has that been a big difference to what was normally done a few years earlier?
I'm not sure it's a big difference. The only big difference is the pre-test done at the beginning of the season before the season starts. That's the only thing that's been a change. Other than that, I think, you know, when kids is, you know, maybe got their bell rung or whatever, and you know, the coaches maybe had seen it or official maybe seen it, has asked them to come off and, you know, have the trainer look at them. Those type of things, but more so now is because of everybody keeping an eye on it. You know, there's more of an emphasis on it, I'd say, than there was before.
Has there been any changes in the sort of plays or techniques used on the field, or is that there have been some changes over there?
Well, I mean, there's been always the talk about leading with the helmet on tackles or blocking, or even you know, you'll see it with from the offensive side too, where a runner just lowers his head and, you know, is going after trying to get a little bit further yardage and maybe trying to knock through some individuals. So yeah, anything that's leading with the head in a lot of cases are going to be, you know, as far as going to be penalties on those players, but it's just the idea of it trying to be safe and trying to teach kids the right way of doing things so that those concussions can be prevented.
Do you think that has cut down on the number of percussions on the field?
Oh, I think, you know, just in the past 5 years, just trying to think of, you know, when I knew we were going to be talking about this, we've had a few concussions, but I don't think the number has changed a whole lot. You know, it's one of those things in a collision sport, you know, like football, you're gonna have those things that's gonna come up. I think you realize that going into it, that, you know, this could happen. I think it's helped. I wouldn't think that it would be detrimental to anything when you put in precautions to try to help concussions, but I haven't seen a real decrease or increase either way. I mean, I think our kids have been taught the right way of doing things as far as tackling through our coaches and stuff, and not to use the helmet. So I think, you know, that has helped.
As these new approaches and rules have been implemented over the past few years, have coaches and players been pretty accepting? What's their response been to the new rules?
Yeah, I think that, you know, in the long run, in particular in our coaches, case, they are very accepting with it. Anything that's going to be safe for the student athlete, they're on board with. So I'm not sure it's been a big change for us and our coaches. Just the simple fact that they've been doing it the right way, teaching it the right way for many years. So it's not been a big change for them.
What about for players? Are they ready to go along with these changes? It can be pretty intense being on the high school football team.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're. It's just one of those things. You know, our coach has been here now for 5 years, and he's kind of done it this way. So they kind of expect it that way when they come in. And so they know the proper ways of blocking, the proper ways of tackling. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things. It's expected of them. So I don't see them going outside the line to do anything other than what they're supposed to be doing.
How about the younger players in junior varsity or freshman football? Do you have to handle anything differently for them due to their physical or psychological maturity?
No, not really. They're right in there with it. I mean, you see a lot of these kids that are coming in that are playing junior varsity that have played, you know, JFL from fifth and sixth grade on. So... You know, they kind of know what's expected, and so it's not a whole lot difference, because the number one thing is they're playing against the same age kids that they have been playing with for a while. So it's not like, you know, you're throwing in a freshman against a senior. They're going against people that are in their grade level, their size, those type of things. So
now I'm wondering, besides just football, other sports, concussions are also an issue for soccer players, for example. Do you think that the policies and rules that you have in place now work to educate and protect athletes in general, or is it this more mostly a football thing?
No, I think it's in general, because, like I said, we have all of our student athletes in all sports sign off on what we need as far as the information of educating them and their parents on concussions. So it's not just for football, it's for everybody. And yeah, you're going to have any type of collision, contact sport, you're going to have the possibility of somebody, you know, even if it's a volleyball player that maybe goes up and spikes a ball and somebody happens to come underneath her, you know, she may come down and hit her head. You know, those are things that happen in the game itself. I mean, it's like that in, you know, when you're talking about soccer and some individual maybe get, you know, a trip going through two people with a soccer ball and falling and landing on their head. Those type of things are going to occur, and it's just part of the game. And it's not something intentional or anything like that. It's just part of the competition that, you know, sometime in the course of a game or in a season, there's going to be that possibility of those things happening.
I gather, you know, sports are not going away, and I gather football certainly isn't going away, even though some people may raise concerns about the risk of concussion. It sounds like football is just as popular as ever.
I don't think there's been enough statistics or data to really figure out if this is making a big difference as far as people not participating in things. I can see from a standpoint of playing other schools where some of our freshman games had to be canceled because people not having enough freshmen. Is that because of this concussion, or is that just because they got small numbers in their school to come up with a freshman team? I don't know. You know, it's just one of those things that I don't think there's been enough study over the last couple of years now to be able to figure out if student athletes aren't going out for sports that, you know, because of a concussion, or if it's just a numbers game.
Have any parents come to you or other people at Monticello High with concerns about potential injuries from concussions?
No, not really. We've not had anything as far as I'm not letting Johnny go off for whatever because of concussion. I've not heard that. is it out there? It could be.
Well, Randy Moss, thank you very much for talking with me today, and best wishes for the Sages as they go into the playoffs.
I appreciate it, and it's been nice talking to you too.
And I recorded our interview with Monticello High School Athletic Director Randy Moss on Monday. Now we're back live on Wednesday morning on Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and joining me now is Adam Tarr. He's a certified athletic trainer with Carl Sports Medicine, and he also spends time regularly with the athletes at Centennial High School in Champaign. He works with the football players as well as athletes in other sports. And Adam, welcome to Focus.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
And tell me, do these recent safeguards that Randy Moss described that they work with at Monticello High School, do they match changes in procedure that you've seen at Centennial over the last few years?
Yeah, the pre-data that we're collecting, it's definitely changed some things that we're doing.
And that's the pre-testing that you do right, say, at the beginning of the season?
Correct.
And what does that change?
Well, really what we're trying to find is each athlete's normal. All of our kids are so different in a lot of different things and a lot of the data that we collect. And so getting each athlete's normal helps us to compare maybe their symptoms when they may be displaying some concussive symptoms, and that way we can determine one, whether they have a concussion, and two, whether they're ready to return back to play.
And you can do that better now than if you hadn't been doing that pre-testing?
The basis that we do it now is more so on data-based decisions versus maybe a subjective call.
So having that data gives you something which you think is a little more solid and objective to go by.
Yeah, we can take what we see and then using that data as well and do the best assessment that we can.
Let me go on to our third guest with us on the phone. From a moving train, I believe, is Chris Nowinski. And if you watched League of Denial on Frontline last night on PBS and WYLL-TV, you heard from Chris. He's executive director of the Sports Legacy Institute in Waltham, Massachusetts, which is dedicated to sports concussion education and research, also co-director of the Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, at Boston University. And in that role, he's been active in trying to obtain the brains of deceased pro football players for post-mortem study. Chris has firsthand experience with concussions as a former defensive tackle at Harvard and a one-time professional wrestler with the WWE, and he's author of the book Head Games, Football's Concussion Crisis. Chris, welcome to Focus.
Thanks for having me.
And Chris, I saw you in League of Denial. That concentrates on professional football, but what about football at the high school level? What do you think of the risks there? How do they compare with what pro players are going through?
Yeah, the big target is on high school and youth football. And I think it's fair to say youth football has dramatically higher risks than the rest of football. We have, smaller brains. Less developed brains, smaller kids with biomechanical issues of having large heads and small bodies, no athletic trainers and all of that. The high school question is an interesting one because it's 1 in 8 boys in this country is playing high school football. The body's a little more mature, but they're basically going through the same brain trauma that the NFL just paid out nearly $1 billion to former players for because of all the damage it caused. And so I think at high school level, we find that there's a wide disparity. Some programs, if they do all the right things, provide the right medical resources, are relatively safe to similar contact sports. But most of them are exposing children to just dramatic amounts of brain trauma.
Okay, and you mentioned youth football as perhaps being the most concerning. What ages are we talking about here in youth football?
Well, I think what we need to do is really have a national discussion about what age it's appropriate to start exposing a child to hundreds of blows to the head. Because a recent study came out of Virginia Tech using sensors finding that 7-year-olds are basically hitting each other as hard as college football players. Not because they're delivering a big blow, because they can't slow their head down when they're hit. And so if you think about, you know, little kids who are too young to tell you when they're concussed, you know, they don't understand the injury, we don't provide them with medical resources, there's an age you should probably start taking this brain trauma, and I can guarantee it's not 5 or 6, but we don't know where it becomes safe enough to be for people to be comfortable with it.
Now, my producer, Lindsay Moon, is reminding me that the Monticello school system, or at least the community program out there, does tackle football starting in the 4th grade, so I guess that's 9 or 10 years old. I want to go ahead.
Certainly a little better, but you know, there's a lot of questions, you know, and we actually have a website, concussionchecklist.org, that we recommend if your parent is playing, you know, contact sports young, even heading soccer balls young, that you explore, you know, are things safe enough for you to feel comfortable.
Let me go to one of our callers. We have a call from Tom from Effingham. And Tom, good morning. You're on Focus. I understand that you had a brother who was a football player.
Yes. I'll try not to get too emotional here. He took his own life 6 months ago. I did watch the...
I'm very sorry.
Yeah, thank you. I watched the Frontline program last night. We have no answers as to why he did, and I'm certainly not blaming football. But there have been 4 athletes off the team that he played on who have taken their lives in the last 5 years. It makes me wonder. Now, he was a great athlete. He started for 3 years, played both ways, which I just find, you know, something that needs to be considered, because you have your both best athletes on all these high school teams that play on both offense and defense. They never get a break. They're the hardest hitters. They're the ones that take the hardest hits. I really don't know what to say. I now have a grandson who's in 3rd grade, who's now in his 3rd year of full contact, full helmet pads football. I don't know what to say or think, but I'd like to hear some comments.
Well, Tom, thank you very much. I do want to make sure your brother, are we talking about high school football experience?
Yes, he played high school football. My name is actually Todd.
Todd, I'm sorry.
And I also watched my own son play JFL football, and by the time he got to 8th grade, like myself, I was rather small as an 8th grader, and he was rather small. And when you get to that grade, I know the coach earlier said, well, the kids are the same age, they're the same size. Well, they're not. When you get to 8th grade, you got kids that are shaving. You got kids that are big. You got kids that can hit. And you know, I think we need – I'm a football fan myself, but we need to take a hard look at this, because is it worth it?
Tom, thank you very much for your comments, and I'm very sorry to hear about your brother, Todd, excuse me. And Chris, maybe if you could comment on this. This is someone who, it was high school football here. This was certainly not the NFL or college.
No, I mean, I think that story really encapsulates all the unknowns that we don't understand. To be honest, you know, there are good studies saying even within a year of having a concussion, your risk of suicide triples. And then long term, what we're finding is a lot of these brains that we're studying of former football players and other contact sport athletes who've died, a lot of them have taken their lives. And a lot of them took their lives because either, you know, the theory is their brain had changed, their impulse control problems and depression issues. For other ones, you look at a guy like Dave Duerson, his life fell apart because of the disease. His family, you know, left him. He got violent with them. He went in $20 million of debt for making bad decisions with a malfunctioning brain, and he took his life under that situation. So to hear 4 players from one team is sad, but I hear it other ways. I've got a board member who played on a Harvard football team that lost 2 guys to suicide. You know, we've got a staff member, you know, from Penn. They've lost a couple guys to suicide. I mean, it's I think this kind of just shows – we really are, you know, the idea of hitting someone in the head, and that two-way comment, a child in Illinois was once recorded taking 2,498 blows to the head in one season, a two-way lineman. He currently holds the record.
And maybe some of us who don't know the game, what does two-way refer to?
Sorry, that's when you play both offense and defense.
Thank you.
Usually it means you're playing special teams, too. That's something I did in high school in Illinois as well.
Okay. I want to go back to Adam Tarr, our trainer here in the studio, and you know, this was someone who played in the 1970s. You're telling me that things are done differently now. Do you think they're done differently enough?
I think it's what we have. I think that the things that these problems long term that we've found to happen that Chris is talking about, I think has changed what we're doing in the present. And it's currently what, as certified athletic trainers, we are given to make the best decisions and to educate the public as well as we can about these dangers of concussion. And so what we're trying to do is just make the best decisions, taking the risk, knowing the risk, and making the best decisions.
Is there more that you would like to see, or other changes that you would like to see now?
I think just having – I'm obviously a proponent of certified athletic trainers since I am one. Mm-hmm. I would always like to see certified athletic trainers on every sideline, at every practice. I feel like my profession does a really good job of making good decisions on the sideline that lead to better health down the road.
You have kids yourself.
I do.
Are they of sports playing age?
No, two, almost three, and five, two girls.
Okay. Later in life, if they want to get into a sport where concussion risks exist, and it doesn't have to be football, I gather, it could be volleyball or soccer where events can occur, how do you think you'll be responding?
I've been asked this question before. It's a good question. I see the benefits of sport every day. I think that the classroom that we have on our fields and courts is something that is not easily replicated. I see the value that a lot of young people get out of that. That being said, I also see the risk of concussion. And so I would be as involved as I possibly could, coach if I could, and try to minimize the risks and do things as well as I possibly could to minimize those risks for my girls to have the best experience that they could.
Okay. Todd, are you still with us? Okay. Well, I want to say thank you for Todd and calling in and sharing with us. We're going to take a short break right now and be back with more discussion about concussion and its risks in high school football. This is Focus on WILL. We're back on Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about what's being done to prevent and address concussion injuries in high school football. My guests are Adam Tarr. He's a certified athletic trainer who's with Carl Sports Medicine and who works with students at Centennial High School in Champaign. And on the phone with us, Chris Nowinski. He's a former athlete who works as an advocate for concussion research and prevention. Call us with your questions at 1-800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. The phone number again, 1-800-222-WILL. Let's go to line one, and Fran from Oak Lawn, good morning. You're on Focus.
Hi. Again, a great topic. You guys are consistently good. Years ago, I heard someone, an inconsequential person, I wouldn't have remembered it otherwise, suggest that it might just possibly reduce injuries if they removed the helmet or if they removed some of the padding. I can't remember the specifics of what he said. And it might inhibit the players about making these hits. And I'm looking on television occasionally. I'm seeing these rugby matches where players, they're big, fast-moving men, just like our NFL players, and son of a gun. But I'm wondering if your guest has access to studies comparing injury rates, types of injuries, things like that, between the two sports.
Fran, thank you. Chris, if I could start with you, and maybe looking back also in your own football experience, do you see a difference between what happens to football players and what happens to rugby players?
You know, that's a great question and insightful. The reality is we added hard-shelled helmets and padding and face masks, not because we were ever worried about concussion. It was because people were dying from skull fractures. And basically hard-shelled helmets prevented that for the most part from happening. But what's happening now is that we also took away the pain and the negative reinforcement of hitting someone in the head because nobody complains anymore. And so if you just go back and watch football 40 years ago when they were first putting on those face masks, they tackled with their shoulders and they got their heads out of the way. Then the head became a weapon. So by the time I was playing, we were taught to lead with your head because you're virtually indestructible unless you broke your neck. And so that actually made the game much more dangerous because we were just the helmet can only protect so much. It doesn't help with rotational acceleration, and that's the bigger part of brain injury. And so essentially we just buried the problem inside the brain.
Adam, maybe you work with some rugby players as well as some football players here in the community. What can you tell as far as what are the dangers are in terms of what actually happens on the field?
I don't exactly work with too many rugby players.
I thought they'd be around here somewhere.
But yeah, I agree with Chris. I think that the wonder is if you take away a helmet, does someone stick their nose into a pile or use their head in the same way that they would with a hard-shelled helmet?
Okay. Fran, I wanted to thank you very much for the call and go on to, I think, a related question. Line 2, David from Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes. It seems to me that there are two types of injury involved here. And I'm certainly not arguing against the helmet. There is the injury where there is a blow to the head, whether it's two helmeted players colliding head-on, or not in the sport of football, but if you were to hit a person with a baseball bat, the helmet could well protect the skull. But with players, even when there's no head-on collision, when the two bodies collide, there is an almost instantaneous halt of forward momentum. It's as though you ran into a brick wall. And the brain floats in the skull, and it continues forward and collides with the front of the skull.
You know, David, I wonder if I could take that question over to Chris, because you just brought up the idea of not just collision of the heads, which is something we've been discussing here, but Chris, if you're just doing a full body collision, is it possible to sustain a concussion even if the head didn't take a direct impact?
Oh, absolutely. It's really just a math problem. It's how fast your brain start or stop over time. And if your brain starts or stops fast enough and the axons get stretched, you'll have that concussion response. And I think this kind of points to the idea that we do have a lack of control. Even if we try to do everything right, we're still going to have a lot of concussions. And that's why one of the big things that we're pushing for in Illinois when it comes to high school football is just limited contact. We were able to convince his advisors to the NFL Players Association that they only hit one day a week with full pads. And we're really struggling to get the high schools to follow suit because the reality is you don't need all those hits to teach how to play football safely. And so and one thing that Illinois has a real problem with is it actually has the worst summer program in the country. Illinois, for some reason, a few years back, after I played at John Hersey High, but we never had helmets on in the summer, they added 20 days of full contact and basically increased someone's brain trauma exposure and risk of concussion by probably 40% by doing that. And we're trying to get rid of that, actually, working with IHSA in my old high school to try to get rid of those extra 20 days and then eventually set limits how many you can have during the season.
Are there other states which do limit the days of contact play in the week?
Yes. Texas actually just passed you can do no more than 90 minutes of hitting. Maryland did the same. There's three or four other states that are starting to do it. They're all listed on our website at sportslegacy.org, but it's something that we're going to all be at in 5 years, so why not do it next year?
And as far as the helmets are concerned, I think I heard Randy Moss saying in our interview earlier in the program that even the helmets have improved. Have they improved in any way that can limit or keep down the number or degree of concussions?
It's hard to say because people can't even agree on how to study helmets. But I think, we appreciate the advances in technology, and they're probably getting a little better at reducing linear force. But again, that big problem is when your brain twists, when your head twists on top of your spine, a helmet can only do so much to protect it. So there's only so far helmets will be able to go.
Chris, I wanted to go ahead with ask you a little bit about your own experience with concussion. I was reading a little bit of Dr. Robert Cantu's book, Concussion and Our Kids. Dr. Robert Cantu co-founded the Sports Legacy Institute with you, and he writes a little bit about treating you as a patient for really severe effects from concussion. You seem better now talking to you, just talking to you on the phone, but what sort of treatment did you undergo?
The treatment was just time, really. You know, my problem was I played contact sports for 19 years, and I never had a diagnosed concussion until my last day. And that's not because I wasn't getting them. It's because I didn't understand. I didn't really get that when I blacked out or saw stars or the sky would change colors that I should actually stop playing or tell anyone about it. And so it caught up to me with WWE at 23 when I lied for 5 weeks while violently symptomatic and, you know, headaches and sleepwalking and all sorts of problems. By the time I got to Dr. Cantu, I was basically unfixable because I added so much additional damage to my brain. And what the magical thing that Bob did is, you know, post-concussion syndrome is hard to treat because I apologize for the train station behind me, but the post-concussion syndrome is hard to treat because we don't really know what works to make the brain recover more quickly. But Bob Cantu really just helped me understand what I'd done to my brain, and that's what really started me becoming an advocate because, you know, he was able to say, you know, you need to rest your brain when you have a concussion. You shouldn't go back in. There are serious long-term consequences. You need to think this through. And that's not a conversation we were having in 2003.
Do you know to what degree your brain has actually recovered?
No. I mean, functionally, I'm pretty normal, although I will tell you, I do take a cognitive enhancer every morning. I originally started taking it to stave off the headaches, and now I find that I don't like the way my brain functions when I'm not on it. So I am cheating a little bit to get back to normal. But I'm also a guinea pig in our studies on CTE, and I can tell you that my brain is not going to the normal category. So I'm not sure how bad my situation is, but I'll trade brains with you any day.
Do you fear more problems down the road?
I think I can virtually guarantee more problems down the road, and that's why we're so focused on developing ways to diagnose CTE in living people and learn how to treat it. Because I still have, if I could stop the disease from progressing in my brain, if I have it right now, I'll take it. But in 10 or 20 years, I may lose so many more cells that it's not worth salvaging that brain anymore. So I have a pretty short window.
You know, this this brings to mind, Adam Tarr, something I think you've discussed about what kids will do in the situation when a concussion may have occurred, and that the kids want to play, and they hate being taken out of a game.
Yeah, it's this reality that exists where we have these football players who are highly motivated. They spend weeks and weeks of training and strength training and practicing football to win these games. And so when I look down the bench on the fourth quarter and we see, you know, somebody that may be displaying symptoms, and I ask them, I question them as to what's going on and kind of go through my litany of questions. You do find kids that they'll lie to you. They will play fly because they want to win these games.
And are they getting more information these days than kids in the past about concussion? Do they have the facts in front of them?
Yes, I can honestly definitely say that we have kids who are taking concussion more seriously. I think they're leaning these games and the winning against that information and trying to in the heat of the moment. It's hard to make a good solid decision as an athlete, which is why it's important for certified athletic trainers to be on the sidelines. But yes, I definitely see more of an awareness, more of a fear of having long-term effects. So the education that myself and people like Chris Nowitzki is doing, it's working.
Well,
can I echo those statements? I mean, I think you're absolutely right, and we have to try so hard to teach these athletes. But we also have to step back, as you said, and appreciate that as children, let's remember they're just teenagers. We honestly believe that they can project forward and understand the long-term consequences of their actions. You know, that if I lie about my concussion today, I'll increase my risk of post-concussion syndrome down the road or CTE. Like, there's a reason why you can't sign a legal contract before you're 18. It's because people don't think your brain works well enough to make those decisions. So athletes who are lying just because they're kids, not because they have informed consent and know they're trading brain cells to play.
Okay. Do you talk to kids about this issue? And I'm wondering if they see you. I've talking to you now and watching video of you in interviews, you seem like a very sharp guy who doesn't carry any visual injuries from your sports career. Can you make a convincing case to kids that, yes, concussion has consequences?
Yes, you can. But it's harder to tell through my own story. It's easier to tell through now the videos we have of so many former athletes who now are demented. Last night in school I was showing video from Gene Atkins, a former NFL player from HBO Real Sports, who at 42, being examined by Dr. Cantu, couldn't recite the months of the year in order anymore. When we have a training program at 9 universities, including 2 in Chicago, at DePaul and the Illinois College of Optometry, and one of the videos they show was that video, and then they have the kids come out of the audience and show, you know, how easy it is to remember things and the name of the months of the year and say, you know, this can happen to you if you don't take these concussions seriously. And by showing those consequences, we get kids, we hope we get them to change knowledge, and we hope we're getting them to change behavior.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Still time for your questions about concussions and high school football for concussion research and prevention advocate Chris Nowinski and certified athletic trainer Adam Tarr of Carl Sports Medicine, who does work with athletes at Centennial High School in Champain. Call us at 1-800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The number again is 1-800-222-WILL. In League of Denial and in Dr. Cantu's book, a lot of attention goes to the CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which was found in the brains of, I guess, most of the deceased ex-football players who've been examined for it so far. And critics question whether football concussions by themselves are enough to cause this, and note that many of the subjects had other problems, including substance abuse. Is the science still not certain here, in your opinion, or is it more solid than the critics say?
The sad thing is, the critics are kind of exposing themselves as really not understanding neuropathology or much of the method that's used. The reality is that no one in the world's history has ever been diagnosed with this disease who did not suffer extraordinary brain trauma, whether it was football, whether it was military service and blast injuries, whether it was spousal abuse. There are even people with developmental disabilities who banged their head against walls all day who developed CTE, who did not, you know, take drugs and go party and have lifestyle issues. So trauma is the principal factor and the only thing we really should be concerned about right now. You really are changing the subject when the critics say, well, but there are genetic issues and there are lifestyle and there are environmental factors. Well, of course there are. There are with every disease. But we really need to be focusing on trauma, because we know that you will not get CTE if you do not suffer brain trauma, and you open up that door to getting it if you do. And there are no perfect correlations. People who smoke 2 packs a day, still only 20% of them end up getting lung cancer and dying from it. So we have to kind of be honest about what's pure science and what's really public health and how do you turn that into policy.
Adam Tarr, we've been talking in terms of high school football here. What other sports do you pay attention to where the dangers and risk of concussion are also pretty substantial?
Well, the possibility is out there for any of the sports. But I think, in the fall, I think we look at, obviously, all levels of football and soccer, both boys and girls, girls in the spring, and then wrestling in the winter as well. Those are the big sports that we concentrate more, not that we don't see other head injuries from those other sports.
Now, when you're talking about wrestling, you're not talking about the sort of wrestling that Chris Nowinski did for the WWE, where there's a lot of jumping and falling. What happens in amateur wrestling that puts it at danger?
I think when you're in these close proximities and you'll have wrestlers take each other down to the mat or bang heads together. I think any of those things. Any of that contact that you see, I think, can cause these issues.
Okay.
If I can jump
yes,
in
Chris.
On that, just, you know, I don't know if you read Rick Tallender's column in the Sun Times this morning, but we had a wrestling coach actually reach out to us after viewing Head Games documentary and say he was embarrassed about a situation he was at. And he sent us the video. At the state championships in 2013 for 106 pounds amateur wrestling in Illinois, athlete was knocked out in the first 30 seconds of the match, showed failed a balance test on camera, didn't move for 5 minutes, and showed symptoms throughout the match and was allowed to continue. And if you want to watch this video, go to sportslegacy.org. It's disgusting and scary. But this, you know, this was 1,000 adults around him, and it was the worst case of child abuse I've seen in years on the concussion issue. So, you know, things aren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay. I want to take another call. We're going back to David from Urbana. We're on line one. David, you're on the air on Focus. We just have a few minutes, but I understand you have a question about repetitive injury.
Yes, I'd like to make this very quick. Not concussions, but simply the impact of the players colliding. There's probably, even for a player playing one way, 25 or 30 in such impacts in a game. How much damage do you think this could be causing, and could the repetitive nature of this actually cumulatively be as severe as concussions? Thank you.
Thank you, David. And Chris, do a lot of smaller impacts, can they add up to that sort of damage?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. What we're finding is through multiple different ways of looking at brains, through fMRI, diffusion tensor imaging, blood tests looking for brain proteins, basically athletes who swore they did not suffer concussion symptoms, but took, you know, dozens of blows to the head in a game or 1,000 in a season, their brains are showing up damaged. They're showing up as if they're concussed. One where they looked at blood proteins literally found a brain protein that only gets into the bloodstream through actual physical brain injury in about 1 out of 6 college football players after the game, and it wasn't there before the game. So these sub-concussive hits is a whole new area of science and definitely scary.
Excuse me, Adam Tarr, is that something that you are looking for or seeing as far as problems from impacts which each by themselves are less than a concussion?
Yeah, I think on the sideline we're always looking for anything, and that's part of the reason we need to get to know these young people personally, so that we can kind of, if they're suffering from a concussion or even a subconcussive kind of hit, to gain that that relationship with them is really important, just to be able to identify these things if these athletes aren't going to come to us. That way we can question them appropriately and determine whether activity is appropriate in each case.
Just in the last minute, high school football is not going away. I just want to ask both of you quickly, what do you think is the best thing, some of the best basic things that can be done to reduce the risk of concussion in the game? Chris, if I could ask you first.
The easy one is you can reduce half the blows to the head and half the concussions by setting strict limits to actual contact in practice. It should be one day a week and zero in the summer. And just focus on that and education, and we'll be in a far safer place.
And Adam, any suggestions?
Yeah, I agree with Chris. Education is a big part, and then I would also add that having certified athletic trainers on site for each practice and game it has to be an essential way we move forward in this case.
Okay.
I agree.
Well, we're out of time. I hope we've shed a little light on the issue. My thanks to my guests, Adam Tarr, certified athletic trainer with Carl Sports Medicine, and Chris Nowinski with the Sports Legacy Institute and the Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy at Boston University. Thanks also to Randy Moss, Athletic Director at Monticello High School, who you heard at the start of our program, and from our callers today. We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website. You can go to it at will.illinois.edu/focus. We're likely the first result on your search engine under WILL Focus. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Sari Lesk is our intern, helping with production and research. Tomorrow on Focus, what are you reading these days? How much are you reading? New research gives a clue into American reading habits. We'll talk about that and some of the new books coming out this fall with a lineup of book-loving guests, including independent bookseller Mary Beth Nabel. That's coming up on Thursday's show. Remember, Focus is live each weekday morning at 10. There's a replay at 8 p.m. You can hear Focus on the air on AM 580, online at will.illinois.edu, where you can also listen to past programs and sign up for our free downloadable podcast at will.illinois.edu/focus. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.